Good afternoon, it's Mountain Edition. I'm Elise Thatcher.
And I'm Allison Bektesh. The Aspen Ideas Festival is in full swing.
We talk with a variety of speakers and visit some of the more unusual events at the annual gathering.
Incumbents keep their seats in Colorado's June primary.
CDOT is working to reach boaters before river restrictions next month.
And a Newcastle doctor has died after a hiking accident.
That's coming up on Mountain Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke at the Aspen Ideas Festival this week about the fight against violent extremism.
Kerry spoke for nearly 45 minutes about violent extremism in the world and the ways to combat it. He mentioned that there were many ways to defeat groups like Boko Haram and ISIS, including education and ending poverty. Kerry also discussed world economics and the recent British vote to leave the European Union. Aspen Institute President and CEO Walter Isaacson questioned Kerry about how to create interest in fixing these issues.
And if all we do is interpret problems in other countries as Americans in our lens, through our felt need, we are neglecting the felt need of all the other people who will also make up policy decisions that have an impact on us.
Other high-profile guests will be speaking at the Aspen Ideas Festival during the rest of the week, including U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, Mitt Romney, and Vice President Joe Biden. Barbara Platts, Aspen Public Radio News.
Caitlyn Jenner, perhaps the world's most famous trans woman, closed the Aspen Ideas Festival Spotlight Health last weekend. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen reports.
The Olympic gold medalist says when deciding to go public that she was transgender, she finally understood why it has taken 65 years to make the transition from Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner.
I thought to myself, you know what? Bruce has done just about everything he can in life. Raised a family, won the games. Maybe I can, for the first time in my life, live my life authentically, and in God's eyes, make a difference.
Buzz Bissinger was the author of the Vanity Fair article when she transitioned from male to female. He is now collaborating with Caitlyn on her memoir. He says when he walked through downtown Aspen Saturday, Caitlyn was stopped at least 75 times by people. Each time, she gave them her full attention, whether it was to talk with them or pose for a selfie.
She was not trying to prove anything, except I am now a trans woman. I want to break down barriers. I want you to see that I'm accessible, that I'm decent, and that I'm kind, and that I care.
Caitlyn told the audience that mental health and psychological issues plague the transgender community, particularly among youth, a 9 times higher suicide rate than the rest. 41% of trans people under 21 attempt suicide. Caitlyn says she contemplated killing herself a few years ago after being outed by the tabloids. Today, she says she's glad she chose a different path. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
A Carbondale resident didn't come close to beating a current U.S. representative in the Republican primary for the 3rd Congressional District. Same goes for a Republican Garfield County Commissioner candidate.
Carbondale resident Alex Feinstein snagged about 20% of the vote statewide in his bid to unseat Congressman Scott Tipton. Feinstein said Tuesday night that the primary results were a surprise.
I got a false impression. I really felt like we had done decently the last couple of months, but I guess I was pretty naive. I thought we would be able to get more unaffiliated voters.
Feinstein says he does not regret anything about his campaign and isn't sure what he'll do next. On Tuesday, Congressman Scott Tipton did not appear to publicly acknowledge winning the June primary. In Garfield County, SILT trustee Aaron Diaz was hoping to beat fellow Republican John Martin in a bid for a seat on the Board of County Commissioners, but Diaz ended up getting only about 20% of the vote.
I did what I wanted to do in trying to bring forth the issues about the need for economic development and diversification in this county. And close to a third of the people in this county, I think, you know, at least on the Republican side, agreed with me on that.
In Pitkin County, Valley natives Greg Poshman and Scott Ryder will advance to the general election for a commissioner seat. Poshman received about 45% of the vote and Ryder 32%. The third candidate, Hawk Greenway, garnered 23%. Poshman says he does not want to campaign hard in the next few months, instead giving voters a break before the real stumping occurs this fall. But he does have this plan.
I'm continuing my listening tour. I'm going to reach out to everyone, to Hawk and Hawk's people in the community that were backing him.
Scott Ryder thanked his supporters in a statement released Tuesday night. Republicans in all three counties chose incumbent Joyce Rankin to continue representing the 3rd Congressional District with the State Board of Education. Statewide, Republicans chose El Paso County Commissioner Daryl Glenn as the GOP nominee for the U.S. Senate. In Garfield, Pitkin, and Eagle counties, however, Republicans narrowly chose former Democrat Jack Graham instead. Voter turnout was the highest in Garfield County, according to the Colorado Secretary of State's office, that tallied up to nearly 27%, with Pitkin County at just over 18%. Eagle County's clerk and recorder estimated that county at about 17%.
Colorado Springs attorney and El Paso County Commissioner Daryl Glenn will challenge incumbent Senator Michael Bennett this November. Glenn won a five-way Republican primary race in order to take on the sitting senator. Capitol correspondent Benta Berkland has more.
Glenn built himself as the true conservative in the race. He had the support of former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, Texas Senator and one-time presidential candidate Ted Cruz campaigned for him leading up to Tuesday's vote. Kyle Saunders is a political science professor at Colorado State University.
Glenn is going to have to move more to the middle. And that's going to be a relatively difficult thing to do, I think, for him.
He was a little-known candidate statewide, but became a grassroots favorite at the GOP state convention, where he overwhelmingly made it onto the ballot. He won the primary with close to 40% of the vote and now faces a well-funded Democratic opponent. I'm Benta Berkland.
The Garfield County Coroner's Office says an emergency department physician has died after a hiking accident near Glenwood Springs.
Dr. William Bevins tripped while hiking the Grizzly Creek Trail in Glenwood Canyon. The 59-year-old Newcastle resident hit his head on a rock during the accident. Another hiker and the Glenwood Springs Fire Department were not able to revive him. Dr. Bevins worked in the emergency department at Grand River Health in Rifle. He previously worked at Valley View Hospital in Glenwood Springs. His family said in a statement that he had practiced medicine around the world, including Kenya and Central Asia.
And in related news, the Garfield County Coroner's Office said Wednesday that 49-year-old Jonathan Carl Rounseville was the man found in the Colorado River near Glenwood Springs on Saturday, June 25th.
Investigators do not know the activities of Rounseville leading up to his death. He may have been fishing, and the coroner's office is asking that river users either on the Roaring Fork or Colorado rivers report fishing equipment that looks like it was abandoned. Friends reported that Rounseville did not raft or kayak. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elise Thatcher. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
Anna Deavere Smith is a professor, an actress, and a playwright. She might be best known for her role in Aaron Sorkin's television drama The West Wing. She is here this week for Aspen Ideas Festival to talk about her play Notes from the Field and her current work, The Pipeline Project.
Deavere Smith explores education issues and how that and poverty are affecting the amount of young people going to prison. She interviewed over 300 people about their experiences and reenacts their conversations on the stage. Deavere Smith spoke with Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen about these conversations and what they mean on a larger scale.
I have a theater project called On the Road, A Search for American Character, and I've made 18 plays in which I deal with usually really social justice events. And I interview people, and then I play many, many parts in a one-person show. So my goal has been to put myself in other people's words, the way you would put yourself in other people's shoes, and really to try to absorb America word for word.
Your project is called Pipeline, but on Sunday in front of an Aspen Ideas Festival audience, you explained that calling it anything else may not entirely be accurate. Let's listen to an excerpt from that session, then I'll ask you to elaborate.
I think it's unfair to call this the school-to-prison pipeline or the school-to-prison pipeline because it seems to blame schools and teachers for something that's much, much bigger.
What is it? What's bigger?
Poverty. I think that not just because of poverty, not just because of racism, not just because of inequality, not just because our public schools are in a mess and we are in a midst of trying to turn around the kind of mass incarceration that we have. I'm not some liberal making this up. United States Justice Department released statistics that show that Black, Brown, Native American, poor kids are punished more harshly. They're suspended and expelled more often than middle-class kids are, and that at a certain age, these suspensions and expulsions pretty much predict they're certainly going to be in the juvenile justice system or have some kind of relationship to it, and very likely they'll be caught in these cycles of mass incarceration that many people in our country are concerned about. I have always wanted to use my art to be sort of an intrinsic part of some kind of a public conversation. Outside of Aspen, when I have a run, you know, several performances, I stop the show in the middle, and I send the audience off in groups of 20 for facilitated conversations, and we ask them to make commitments about what will they actually do. Because this is something that's going to take a real change in the public attitude.
How do you choose which interviews you will take and put out there?
Some of it is I have to, in this I'm not really telling a story, I'm trying to illuminate an issue. It's complex, there are many facets of it, right? So, for example, you know, if I talk to a psychiatrist who talks to me about trauma, as Victor Carrion does, then when I go inside to a OH Close, a juvenile prison, and I ask his kids, you know, Stephen Campos, what about trauma? And he tells me it's, you know, what that we can't say on the air.
Right.
Then, hey, the two of them are going to be on the show. But it's also that I'm looking for people who have something to say that they would scream from a mountaintop and I just happen to be walking by.
Like one of the people you interviewed and then personified on Sunday. Let's listen to a clip of that performance.
I mean, in retrospect, I did all I could. I did all I could. I worked myself to the bone, but I felt hopeless in the situation.
What was that?
That was Stephanie Williams, who's a very wonderful emotional support teacher who I met in Philadelphia, and I met a lot of people like Stephanie who they're trying to save lives and they're giving it their all with very few resources. And, you know, I think people like Stephanie who are working, as she says, she never knew how bad a situation could be until she worked with the population of kids who needed emotional support. I mean, I feel they should be taken on vacation. They should be brought to Aspen.
That was actress Anna Deavere Smith speaking with Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Sekariasin at the Atlas Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Shining brightly on the Aspen Institute campus this week is a portal to another space, a project by a group called Shared Studios LLC. In Aspen, it's temporary, but all over the world, there are matching gold-painted shipping containers placed in public areas, providing audio and video connection to other portals.
Or more accurately, providing human connection. Yesterday, I virtually visited Kigali, Rwanda, and spoke with Dogon Nishimiyimana. Hi, Dogon.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fine. What's your name?
I'm Allison.
I'm Allison.
Oops, not Amalison, just Allison. Our internet connection was bad, but even so, I realized I could have been more clear during introductions. We did hit it off, though. Is it your first time being in a portal?
Yeah, in my first time.
Me too.
No, wow, we are the same.
There's a fan blowing. The dark, enclosed portal gets hot. There are lights shining on my face, and Dogon is standing in front of me. I mean, he's not in the portal. He's 9,000 miles away. But it really looks like it. I can see him, head to toe, standing the same relative height he would be in real 3D life.
The idea is you can converse live. You basically can walk in and just naturally strike up a conversation as if you were in the same room.
That's Shared Studios founder Amar Bakshi. He's an artist and began the Portals project in his hometown of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, so I built the first one in my parents' backyard. The neighbors complained first that they thought it was an eyesore, then that they thought I was living in it. And then finally I put Portal to Tehran on it, and they called the FBI saying that it may be a terrorist cell. So it wasn't. It was clear.
As Bakshi traveled the world as a reporter, he thought of his grandmother, who had never returned to her childhood home of Lahore, Pakistan, after fleeing during partition. He wanted a way to take her back to her neighborhood to speak with people who would connect her to home.
Okay, ready?
My name is Tay.
These days, the project is something much bigger. Portal communities have moved beyond the one-on-one conversations and opened up the space for worldwide rap battles. Classroom cross-cultural learning, performances, and a virtual town hall. President Barack Obama was just in a portal, connecting to five other countries.
But the problem is this one. There are seven children home, and seven. My dad is having, seven, and my dad is having two women.
Back to yesterday morning, Dogan and I are getting to know each other, and it's quickly personal and heart-wrenching. He has spent most of his life in refugee camps. He showed me the scar on his face from a machete during a massacre when he was seven. I asked him what he likes for dinner, and he explained to me he only eats lunch. There's not enough food for more than one meal a day. Dogan received high scores to go to a university and study to become an educator, but he's not allowed to be a teacher or work in the public sector at all because he's a refugee. He tells me this, but all through his education, he never told his classmates.
No, nobody knows that I'm a refugee in my classroom. Because even
with the huge refugee population, there's a stigma that they're using up too many resources, that they're lazy, that they are drug users.
And I feel sorry and I feel ashamed to say that I'm a refugee. Nobody knows that.
Bakshi says the portals become something of a confessional during the 20-minute interaction. Anything can happen. And that is the art of it.
There's a tendency everywhere to think immediately about, like, what's its use? How does it make money? Because it's art, because it has no particular use, it's open to being used as an education tool, a protest tool, whatever. And so having no purpose is very important to its purposes.
The portal is on the Pepke Lawn at the Aspen Institute through Thursday as part of the Aspen Ideas Festival.
Okay, it was so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Allison Bektesh. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Young adults from across the globe gathered at the St. Regis Ballroom earlier this week. It was the first ever program at the Aspen Ideas Festival aimed at inspiring a segment of the population to get more involved in the world and was geared to those between 14 and 21 years old. Reporter Barbara Platts went to check it out and has this report.
I need everybody to get up out of your seat right now.
On Monday, an MC was somehow able to get a young crowd of around 250 people energized enough about an afternoon of performances, lectures, and discussions. The speakers, there were 15 total, ranged from award-winning poets.
Treat us absent when they don't feel connected to my presence, huh? Can't call on raised hands of ghosts, so we float. Hallway glide to dunk and locker room gatherings for toast.
To an Afghan female rapper. To a former acting Solicitor General of the United States and even Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. The diversity in speakers played into the mission of the forum, which was to empower a group of young people to engage in solving the critical issues of the day. You know, like the burden of student loans, prison reform, women's equality, you get the idea. 14-year-old Tullis Burroughs grew up in Aspen. He says the afternoon gave him a lot of confidence in his generation.
I thought it kind of showed how our generation is willing to tackle some of the issues that previous generations have been kind of walking around and not really willing to get involved in.
This 3.5-hour seminar is part of a larger effort by the Aspen Institute that started about a year ago when Walter Isaacson, the CEO, said there needed to be a focus in the organization based on youth and engagement. Raj Vinakota is the executive vice president at the Aspen Institute for Youth and Engagement Programs. To get this new initiative off the ground, Vinakota and his team knew it was vital to have a component of youth engagement at one of the Institute's signature events of the year, the Aspen Ideas Festival.
The division is looking at working with young people in a direct way, everything from leadership development to increasing civic engagement to fostering the youth voice and youth agency.
The diversity of the crowd in the ballroom was palpable to anyone who entered.
We have DC, we have South Africa, we have Mozambique, correct? Hey! New York!
Many of the youth in the room were brought here on scholarships from the Aspen Institute. Again, Vinakota.
To be able to fund all these young people from very diverse sets of backgrounds to be able to come is why we're blessed to be able to have such a nice diversity of youth.
14-year-old Aspen resident Chloe Bretman says she loves seeing how different the speakers are and how they are trying to make positive change in the world.
They're using all different sort of methods to promote world peace and find resolutions to issues. It just showed there's no right or wrong way to do it, and there's no right or wrong answer.
And for Dejan Harges, a 17-year-old from Cleveland, the afternoon was very inspiring.
Now I understand that growth is key, and if I really want to become someone and actually do something with my life, I need to grow.
The Young Adult Forum will be back next year for Aspen Ideas Festival 2017. Barbara Platts, Aspen Public Radio News.
This fall, Coloradans will consider a health care measure in addition to a long list of local, state, and national races. Colorado Care is an amendment to the state constitution that would establish a single-payer health insurance system. Former Colorado State Senator Jeannie Nicholson led the effort to get the proposal on the ballot. Ellison recently spoke with Nicholson and asked her to explain what switching insurance systems will mean for Coloradans.
It will mean that the citizens will pay a premium tax with their payroll. So if you're an employee, you will pay 3.33% of your income. If you are an employer, you will pay 6 2/3% for all of your employees. And if you are self-employed, you will pay something less than 10%. If you are retired and on Medicare, you will pay something less than 10% based on your tax bracket.
So what do you tell people who have health care provided and all of a sudden 3% of their income would start going to this?
We tell them that this will be a good supplemental plan for them and that they may be quite surprised about whether their coverage is as good as they think that it is. Colorado Care would have no deductibles. Almost all health insurance plans have deductibles. Colorado plan would have no copays for preventive care. And so what happens is that many people have health coverage, but when it's time for them to use it, they realize they actually can't afford to use their health care coverage because of the high deductibles and copays.
Do you take into consideration cost of living? Really, this whole valley is just such a high cost of living. So a 3% hit for like the working people of Aspen might be a significant portion of their remaining funds.
The other way to look at that is that right now, the people in Pitkin County are paying an unbelievably higher rate for their insurance premiums than the rest of the state.
So we already kind of are taxed based on location. The Colorado Care would not take into consideration where you reside.
Exactly, because I don't see any point in why you would be penalized because you live in Aspen and therefore you have to pay far more for the exactly same kind of health insurance from the same company as somebody that lives in Kit Carson.
That was former State Senator Jeannie Nicholson speaking about Amendment 69, which will be on the ballot this fall. For the full interview, go online, aspenpublicradio.org. Aspen Public Radio reached out to Kathleen Killian of the Valley Health Alliance for the story. She replied that VHA will not comment at this time as they are, quote, still studying the controversial impact of the amendment for all.
The Grand Avenue Bridge Project in Glenwood Springs is on time after chugging along for more than 5 months. At this point, a key goal for the Colorado Department of Transportation is making sure river users know about upcoming closures.
Victoria Powell is strapping down a raft on a trailer after floating the Colorado River on a sunny Sunday. She and a crew of others are at Two Rivers Park in Glenwood Springs, and she has not heard about restrictions planned for the week of July 18th.
I'm wondering if it's a Saturday or Sunday and if I was planning to be on the river those days.
Powell is in luck. The closures are not scheduled for weekends and will in fact be only weekday mornings between 4 a.m. and noon, Monday through Friday. Another boater here is drying out his vessel and also has not heard about the impending closures.
Wayne Curtis from Tampa, Florida.
Curtis is enjoying a month-long stay in Glenwood Springs. During this run, he started out on the Roaring Fork River and so missed going under the Grand Avenue Bridge. But he plans on getting on the Colorado more during his visit. After learning about the upcoming restrictions, he shrugs his shoulders.
4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m. I'm on vacation, so I'm doing something with my eyes closed.
CDOT is hoping to reach recreators like Powell and Curtis about the closure by putting up flyers at popular put-ins. One of the most affected runs will be from Grizzly Creek to Two Rivers Park, and the agency is working with rafting companies to make sure they avoid the restricted times. The whole point is to make sure boaters aren't underneath construction work scheduled for the week of July 18th.
So we can place the girders for the pedestrian bridge onto the piers that you see coming out of the ground.
Tom Newland is a spokesman for the project.
Girders are basically the foundation for the deck that you'll walk on the pedestrian bridge. So there are large metal objects that'll be coming in on large trucks and being placed with cranes on the piers.
And if any of those materials or equipment came crashing down into the river when there was a rafter passing by, Newland says it would be a catastrophe. There will be another educational effort in place for boaters to prevent such a situation during the closures.
We are going to have a daily hotline conference call that will be at 3 o'clock every day starting July 11th.
Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Elise Thatcher. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Today is Elise's last day. We bid her farewell.
Thanks to Allison and everyone else at Aspen Public Radio for the camaraderie and radio adventures, and an especially big thank you to all of our wonderful listeners. We truly couldn't do what we do without you.
Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.